Hello everyone, it's Ben here. Just a quick apology at the start of this episode. Always good to start anything with an apology, I find. This episode is coming to you a week late, so sorry about that. But we had a new arrival in our family this week. We've got a little daughter and now we have a little son as well. O'Mercy Burrell was born. I'm joking, his name's not O'Mercy, it's Isaac. Isaac Burrell. My wife didn't listen to any of my name suggestions. Not O'Mercy, not Bob, nothing ridiculous. Anyway, we've had a baby and that's taken up my time over this week. So the edit was left in ruins when that baby arrived, so I can only apologise. Point being, it's here now. Enjoy. My name is Ben Burrell, and this is Bob Dylan Album by Album, a podcast that brings you an in-depth look at each Bob Dylan studio recording, record by record. So once again, we are diving into Bring It All Back Home. We're going to have a look at this sort of, I don't know, like the middle section, I guess is the phrase I've used here, the middle section of the album, and we're going to have a look at its recording process, which, like all of Bob's kind of 60s albums, well, most of them anyway, was quite a quick process. I do kind of marvel at the fact he just churns out these albums in like a matter of days. And it's not like the writing has been done over years and years either. I think, not that I in any way have a kind of grasp on creativity, but I do kind of feel like there's something in that. There's something in just writing stuff and just getting it out there and recording it and kind of just capturing that magic very quickly without dwelling on it too much that definitely seems to aid at least Bob's kind of creativity. So we're going to look at the recording process of this album in just a second. Before we do, let's give a shout out to people that have bought coffees recently. This is the kind of tipping system for the podcast, if you will. So thank you very much to James Palmer. Alan, thank you once again. Sandman, thank you to you. Andy H, nice one for your donation. Hi to Helen Charman, thank you for your donation as well. Emily, Jane and Pete, thank you. And hi to Marcus as well, all buying coffees for the podcast. And we thank you for that. You can make a little donation to the podcast if you want to. As always, the Buy Me a Coffee link is in this episode's description. Right, let's get to it, shall we? This is part number three on 1965's Bring It All Back Home.
Of war and peace, the truth just twists its curfew gull, it glides.
And so we reach the middle section of Bringing It All Back Home, and it very much feels like a middle section. While this LP smacks us around the face with its tops and tails, shattering the myth of who Dylan could be and delivering some songs that would shape the 60s music scene in the process, the middle section takes its foot off the accelerator, even if it's only just for a second. It begins with Outlaw Blues, and I think Dylan is having fun. We know he likes to play outlaws, and here we are at that once again. It's a bluesy cruise around the absurd. It starts with the lines, "Ain't it hard to stumble and land in some funny lagoon?" The original line for this was, "Ain't it hard to fall in some dark lagoon," which I think indicates there's not too much really going on here. Bob's just, as I say, having fun. He throws in some blues singer references, starting at the end of the first verse when he sings, "Especially when it's 9 below 0 and 3 o'clock in the afternoon." 9 below 0 is a song written and performed by the master of the blues harmonica, Sonny Boy Williamson, who has cropped up a number of times on this podcast. Then we start having some proper fun. In the second verse, we get the lines, "Well, I might look like Robert Ford, but I feel just like Jesse James." Robert Ford was a member of the outlaw Jesse James's gang in the late 1800s. Ford had been arrested for murder, but he had made an agreement with the governor of Missouri to kill James in return for his freedom, and also $10,000 as well. It was agreed upon, and Ford shot James in the back as he was attempting to hang a picture on the wall. This is all true, apparently. Which is why the preceding lines in the song are, "Ain't gonna hang no picture, ain't gonna hang no picture frame. Ain't gonna hang no picture, ain't gonna hang no picture frame. Well, I might look like Robert Ford, but I feel just like Jesse James." Later, it seems the outlaw is a little closer to Dylan than we might have first thought. Bob sings, "I got my dark sunglasses, I got for good luck my black tooth. Don't ask me nothing about nothing, I might just tell you the truth." While this is a pretty straightforward blues song, we must give a mention to the harmonica that is ever present in the right ear. It acts as a sort of backing vocal for Dylan, as well as providing a nice texture to the song. This final verse is shared with another Bob song called California, which ended up being on the Cutting Edge bootleg and also bizarrely featured in an episode of the TV show NCIS and ended up on its soundtrack too.
Well, I got my dark sunglasses, I got for good luck my black tooth. I got my dark sunglasses and for good luck I got my black tooth. Don't ask me nothing about nothing, I just might tell you the truth.
Both California and Outlaw Blues were tracks in the first recording session for Bringing It All Back Home. This happens on January the 13th, 1965, at Columbia Studio A in New York. As we know, Tom Wilson was the producer. I always find it funny that for this album where Dylan goes electric, or at least half goes electric, the opening session for this album was all acoustic, with Dylan on the acoustic guitar and on the piano. It's no surprise that nothing really comes of this session. It seems a little more of a working everything out type deal. Only one track from that session actually makes it on the album, and it's not even a whole track. It's that laugh-laden intro to Bob Dylan's 115th Dream.
I was riding on the Mayflower when I thought I spied some lead.
Start again.
They start the session with Love Minus Zero, then quickly move on to I'll Keep It With Mine, which is the version that ends up on the Biograph compilation. The German singer Nico would include it on her brilliant Chelsea Girl album, whilst the singer-songwriter Judy Collins released it as a single in 1965. In the liner notes for her 1993 Geffen Records album Just Like a Woman, a Dylan tribute, which I'm sure that Geffen loved, she mentions that Dylan told her that he'd written the song for her. The story of this song, though, doesn't stop there. Bob has attempted to record it a few times, starting out as a demo for the publishing company Whitmark & Sons. That happens in June 1964, and that was released by Columbia in 2010 on the Bootleg Series Volume 9. He then cuts it here in 1965, retitled as Bank Account Blues, and then again during the Blonde on Blonde sessions. This happens to begin with on the 27th of January 1966. That is the one that is released on the Bootleg Series Volumes 1 to 3. But he's still not done with it. In the next month, still during the Blonde on Blonde sessions, and with the newly acquired Nashville Cats, Dylan's backing band for the album, he runs through the song multiple times. In fact, they even try and cut it without Bob at one point. There was a lot of waiting around during that album, as we know. Despite all this airtime, though, it never actually materializes as a proper Dylan single. Back to that first day session of Bringing It All Back Home, though, and while nothing came of it apart from that stalled intro, the second day was much better. They start recording at 2:30 in the afternoon and go until 6. They then pick things up again at 7 and run through till 10 p.m. In classic Bob fashion, they go from having 0% of the album recorded to just under 50% of it in place. In this session, they get Love Minus Zero, Subterranean Homesick Blues, Outlaw Blues, She Belongs to Me, and a much less laughy version of Bob Dylan's 115th Dream. They start with Love Minus Zero, No Limit. They get it on the second take, with an insert being recorded straight after. Next, they get Subterranean Homesick Blues in 3 attempts. It's the same story for the next track, Outlaw Blues. She Belongs to Me only takes 2 attempts, and it's the same for Bob Dylan's 115th Dream. The lineup for this song is Al Gagone on guitar, Kenneth Rankin on guitar as well, Bruce Langhorne also on guitar, Joseph Macho Jr. on bass, Bobby Gregg on drums, and Paul Griffin on piano. A few other musicians were in the studio on other songs that day, including William E. Lee and Frank Owens. In the song, we go on a voyage of absurdist surreal history, with many historical and literary references from the voyages of Columbus to the Mayflower to Moby Dick, right up to 60s culture, where an Englishman says fab.
I ran right outside, I hopped inside a cab, I went out the other door, this Englishman said fab, as he saw me leap a hot dog stand in a chariot that stood parked across from a building advertising Brotherhood.
Now, while the second session for this record had been a productive one, it does end in disappointment. There's 4 attempts at the song On the Road Again, but it doesn't come. They down tools at 10 p.m. after 3 hours of recording. The next day, on the 15th of February, they hit the ground running with that one-hit wonder of Maggie's Farm. Emboldened, Bob and the band dive headfirst back into On the Road Again, but it still takes time. There's an incomplete take. Then there's four false starts. Dylan does an acoustic take that is complete. Then there's an electric take that is a full cut. But they still weren't happy. After another four false starts and some light tweaking, they get it on take number 12. While this song isn't a headliner of the album, the focus is often pulled by Mr. Tambourine Man or Subterranean Homesick Blues or It's All Over Now, Baby Blue, but On the Road Again for me is one of the LP's most sonically interesting. It starts off with that howling harmonica, which sounds like we're about to head into an old blues tune, and of course we do, but something else happens too. The guitar in the right ear, whilst playing the blues, is a little heavier than your standard six-string blues sounds. Also, its muted performance recalls more of a rock and roll sound too. But for me, it's Frank Owen's electric piano that is the secret sauce here. It sounds like it's played on a knife edge, with its rotary, delicate sounds giving the song a slightly otherworldly quality, perfectly encompassing what I mentioned on a previous episode of this podcast about this album, and how it nods to the psychedelic without ever tripping out. It's the same for the lyrics, especially that oddball opening line. With this song finally off their backs in that third session, the band and Bob were clear to complete the album. Almost half the session had been dedicated to that tune, and from here on out, like we often see with Bob, they rattled through the remaining tracks. First up, after On the Road Again, there's a false start of It's Alright Ma, I'm Only Bleeding, but then they get all 7.5 minutes recorded on the second go, coming quickly possibly because it's just Bob on the acoustic. While Mr. Tambourine Man, the song they turn their attention to next, is also a mostly acoustic song, it proved a little problematic. They try and get it with the whole band at first. There's a couple of false starts, including Bob and Tom Wilson having a slightly agitated, yet sort of friendly exchange.
Hold tape. CO 85289, Mr. Tambourine Man. Take one.
If you look at me, Tom...
Huh?
Look at me, you'd see when I wave my hands, you know.
Well, I ask you where you're ready, and I have to look down to write the take number, Bob.
The second take falls apart as Bob announces that maybe he should just go through it with Bruce Langhorne. But that doesn't seem to get anywhere either. They continue with the band, but it's not good. The drumming's driving me mad, Bob says, as the take disintegrates. In truth, it had been out of time for more than a few bars at this point.
Hey!
There's a couple more attempts, but again, it's not coming. Finally, though, minus the drums, they get it. It really is the best version from these sessions for me, although it would be eclipsed by Bob's live versions a decade or so later on the Rolling Thunder Review Tour, particularly at Boston Music Hall on November the 21st, 1975.
Out to the windy beach, far from the twisted reach of crazy sorrow. It's the dance beneath the diamond sky with one hand waving free. Silhouetted by the sea, circled by the sugar sands, with all memory and fate, living deep beneath the waves. Let me forget about today until tomorrow.
Back to 1965 though, and with Mr. Tambourine Man done and dusted, it was time for another one-take wonder. This came in the form of album closer, It's All Over Now, Baby Blue. They then returned to another song from that very first session, If You've Gotta Go, Go Now. Whilst they had only given it one shot in that session, here with the album almost done, they give it another audition, and it goes well. There's four takes, all of them are complete. The first is Dylan on his own, then they record a full band take. After this, there's a couple more full Bob solo takes. They then down tools and the album is done. But they weren't quite done with this song yet. Bob plays it live soon after that final Bringing It All Back Home session. He trots it out in Springfield, Massachusetts on the 29th of January 1969. He then plays it again in March in Santa Monica and in April in Vancouver and again later that month on a UK tour during various dates. He also records it again too, but this time in England. Following his final concert gigs of that tour on May the 9th and the 10th in 1965, Bob spends the afternoon at Levy's recording studio in London. The idea was that he would record some promo spots in which Dylan would say thanks to Columbia employees for selling so many of his albums.
Okay, Bob Dylan convention speech, take one.
Hi, thank you very much for selling so many of my records. I'll see you next year in New York. God bless you.
Oh, come on, give it to me.
More?
No, give it to me like the first time. Where you said,
I forgot what
You said you were Bob Dylan and
I see.
Was in Miami.
I didn't say that.
Yes, you did.
No, you did.
You said, hi, this is Bob Dylan.
No, I didn't say that at all. I just said hi.
Oh, okay. Give me one more. Take two.
Hi. This is Bob. Thank you very much for selling so many of my records. I wish I could be there with you right now at this minute, but unfortunately I'm all tied up. I'll see you, though, when you come around to see me next time. God bless you all, and keep selling a lot of records.
The remainder of the time at Levy's was spent working on a version of If You've Got to Go, Go Now, or Else You've Got to Stay All Night. Joining Dylan on the track was members of John Mayall's Blues Breakers, although apparently one member, Eric Clapton, was not present. Bob was apparently a little drunk by the time it came round to actually recording the song, which is perhaps why during the counting intro, the band starts laughing and someone says, "You haven't worked much with bands, have you?" Dylan responds, "I don't need no count, man."
Okay, Dylan. One.
I will just do one verse, okay?
Yeah.
You want me to, give the count or should
I? You will, yeah.
One, two, three.
Do it inside.
You haven't worked much in bands.
No, I don't do any count. You just start. You come in. Listen to me, baby. There's something you might see.
A complete version of this song didn't emerge from that session, which, you know, isn't too surprising. The song, though, almost refused to die. A few days later, and back in New York, producer Tom Wilson was cutting the song again, except this time there was no Dylan, and who could blame him? He's pretty fed up with it by now. During the session, they mainly added some overdubs and some backing vocals coming from unidentified vocalists. They cut 7 takes, and 2 of them made it to official releases, coming out on the first bootleg series, and the other being issued as a single released in the Netherlands in 1967, where, as we mentioned before in this podcast, it failed to chart. Which just goes to show you can put a lot of time and effort into something and it still not be a success. However, let's not forget that it was also released by Manfred Mann in the UK, becoming a big hit. The bigger picture was, though, that Dylan had started his journey into the world of going electric on this record. His album, Bringing It All Back Home, was ready to be unleashed onto the world. And while at times it might have felt like he opened a Pandora's box, he'd actually just done the smartest thing of his entire career, to date and possibly ever. A new type of Dylan awaited, and it was about to change everything.
Well, I wake up in the morning, there's frogs inside my socks. Your mama, she's hiding inside the icebox.
That is it for this episode. As always, hope you enjoyed. Next time out, we are sticking with this album, and we are having a look at one of the best songs on it. In what some would say is far too much detail. We'll get to that next time. In the meantime, thanks again for listening. I'll see you down the road.